So who here is ready to hear what I'm going to say after that introduction that Julie gave? I sat there thinking, wow, this is so humbling, and I wonder how many people are going to leave before the sermon comes because they're afraid of what I'm going to say. I'm just kidding, Julie. Thank you for that. So I don't know about you all, but when I turned the calendar page the other day and saw that it was February, my stomach turned a little bit. I'm sure for each of us, a new month elicits some kind of from-the-body response, or that's my hope, at least, that I'm not alone in this. It's always another day closer to some celebration or anticipation. It is also always another day farther from a time or person that still takes space in our hearts. I remember when Reverend Jennifer Brooks served here as the interim minister, she came and preached at the congregation I was serving up in Summit, New Jersey, and I was her worship associate. At one point in her sermon, a sermon on time, she had me hold this enormous clock and fully robed, and of course, me in heels, I ran around the pillared sanctuary to illustrate the relativity of time. Painfully slow for some, like those of us in heels, thinking we were going to trip in front of the congregation we served. Painfully fast for others. Round and round I went, hearing her words, nodding along. For me, this February is reminding me that Sue, our ministerial intern, begins the second and final half of her journey with us. And I am thinking of all the small lessons and insights she has brought to me and the staff, and I hope to each of you as well, simply by observing the way we go about congregational life here at UUCWC. It wasn't 2 months ago that she and I sat in my office when I heard Sue tell me of her deep appreciation for the seven principles, an appreciation I know many of you heard in her sermon last week, and how they had transformed her life. And there she was telling me that she expected that I felt similarly, that I felt the same, also being raised Unitarian Universalist. I heard her passionately talk about each of the seven in disordinate order and thinking, okay, but I don't know. The principles? I've always agreed with those who lamented that no one would ever want the seven principles recited at their deathbed. I am the Unitarian Universalist minister who struggles to remember numbers 2 through 6, in part because I think the first and seventh are enough. I love instead the stories of universalism, not all saints but all souls, how we need not think alike to love alike, salvation in this life for all because of all. And the Unitarian stories, too, of course, that people are born good, that our ability to think and question was God moving through us, that we should want to follow the prophets but never worship them. These have been the stories that have been enough for me. These have been my elevator speeches and stories to strangers who I meet or get caught on the airplane sitting next to. But Sue's sermon from Sunday and her enthusiasm for, she is right, these seven statements that have been with me since birth that defined how I should navigate the world and my relationships with others, but also with myself, it has drawn me back in, prayerfully, to the words most of us do not spend nearly enough time with. Of course, we didn't have principles until the 1960s, 1961, in fact, until the Unitarians and Universalists came together, forgoing their creeds and striving to find some common language that would legitimize their marriage, of which we are the recipients. And in 1961, there were only 6 principles. I've included them in your crossings, too, to look at later. They are recognizable, you will see, and also importantly different. In the original, you'll find a whole lot of brotherhood and a little bit of evangelism. There were no sources from which we might garner wisdom, and it wasn't until the 1980s that the principles were rewritten, that we became a people of seven principles rather than six. Can you imagine describing this tradition, describing Unitarian Universalism, without that interdependent web? I can't. Five sources were introduced then too, and that wasn't the only edit. After two decades, our language finally became intentionally gender neutral, despite the suggestion that we were giving in to the manhunts of the time. And then another 15 years more in 1995 with another edit, this time to our sources, when the sixth source, earth-based spirituality, became part of our lexicon. All this to say, these words, our North Star that we commit ourselves to as a community and I would hope as individuals, they have changed. Recently, in fact. And that change was not out of happenstance, not the growing pains of some new faith trying to figure it out. It is instead our illustration of faithful living, an acknowledgement, a theological argument that we don't always know what's right, or what's right for always. Mandating against our human lust for stability and sameness, did you know that it is written into our Unitarian Universalist Association bylaws that our principles must be reviewed with the possibility, or at least willing openness, for these statements to be changed every 15 years? How silly that I have taken for granted one of our most obvious expressions of our faith in practice. As Unitarian Universalists, we are reminded, we are charged to practice that which we promise ourselves to evolves, must evolve, and we with it. Now, I'm guessing you're hearing this and thinking or feeling the thing that I'm about to say. We don't like change, we humans. How dare they? I shared with some of you recently how I was at a coffee shop the other day and overheard this man being intensely interviewed for some sort of personality test, job interview. I have no idea what it was for. But he was asked in detail about all the inner workings of his life. And when the question came about how he feels about change, how he navigates change, he sat more upright. You could see he had practiced this. He knew this question was coming up. In all the Google searches, on all the interview questions, this is the one he was ready for. And she said, "So how do you deal with change?" And he leaned in and he said, "I love change." To which I guffawed. Out loud, sitting at the table next to him, and then quickly had to reach for my cell phone to pretend like it was something that had happened at my own table. We don't like change. Nobody loves change. And yet, as Unitarian Universalists, we are set up to be tested in this discomfort time and again. We are a living tradition, as our hymnal's title proclaims. We are not canonized. We are not fixed, but urged to listen to the movement of the world as some holy whisper or some sacred scream, and then made to decide when we are at our best selves to move to. At times, yes, that movement has been done with grace and enthusiasm. We can be proud of how we have moved and moved with the world. And other times, let us not forget that we have grown because there are some among us who have served as the oars of this boat, insisting that forward push, that wider, more true embrace. In the coming months, there will be a proposal, both from the Unitarian Universalist Association's board and also within our congregation, supported by our own board, to adopt an eighth principle. Ultimately, by the denomination as a whole, but first congregation by member congregation. I've left a handout of the words in the back for you to take home if you wish. This is what it reads. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote journeying toward spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions. Now, I am certain that among 10 of us here, there are 30 opinions on the matter. Maybe more from the front row. On the language, the purpose, the process. The Right Relations Committee and the Racial Justice Initiative will be holding listening circles around the language and the process at UUCWC throughout April and May. Today, we have the amazing members of Princeton here to hold listening circles in room 202 after the service on the UUA process of adoption. Hear what I'm saying? Language and UUCWC, April and May. Denominational affairs, today. Whatever your initial reaction is to this proposal, to the eighth principle, to this potential eighth principle, I want to offer you this. It is tangential, but it is important, so please try to stay with me. In 1970, the number of women in ministry and leadership were counted, and I quote, as a mighty few. And today, over half of our congregations are served by women ministers. Language, what is said, what is absent from being said, it all matters. I cannot be convinced that even just the conversations around words like brotherhood and dignity of man didn't make some significant impact on who we are. Not just in demographics, but in how we move through the world, in what we say is important, in who we say matters. Now, I'll also tell you that according to the UUA, there are only 3 women serving in any one of our largest congregations or most prestigious pulpits. And most of our ordained women serve most of our smallest congregations. Language doesn't fix everything, or at least not overnight, but it still matters. The absence of women in our principles mattered. Their inclusion and our commitment to learning why it mattered changed us. I hope you would say for the better. And second, this isn't just an exercise in change for change's sake. And this isn't just another way we are engaging racial justice within our ranks, though that would be worthy enough. Our polity, the way we decide who we are and how we make decisions, who we will be with one another, it defines the way in which we believe human beings should be with one another. The exchanges we will have over the change from 7 to 8 principles will be a guide for each of our relationships. And I don't mean just in this congregation or within Unitarian Universalism, but each of our relationships. This will be, as everything we do as Unitarian Universalists is, an exercise in public theology. I'll end by asking you to hear the reflection of Walter Royal Jones from a UUA article on the evolution from 6 to 7 principles. The switch from the free and disciplined search for truth in the 1961 statement to free and responsible search for truth and meaning, language I hope you're more familiar with, suggesting that the search takes place in community, was significant. He also considers notable the adjective inherent in place of supreme to qualify the worth of every person, since it recognizes that people's inner potential can be hidden or rejected or even betrayed. Here's the especially important part. Jones reflects that apart from Quakers and their time-honored preference for consensus, it is unlikely that the history of religion provides any comparable example of such intentional and committed use of inclusive, non-hierarchical process to produce a guiding statement. This is who we are. Time is a funny thing. We can forget how brief our history is, and how quickly we become attached to transient things, Our hearts have a hard time remembering how the assault of change will not live in us forever. Time can make us impatient. Time can make us pull back on the reins. Today, may we give thanks for those who, in their brief time with us, remind us to look again at things passed by. For others who insisted we look at what we hold true and wonder faithfully if it is time to grow in our understanding, our language, our conversations, and our commitments. And let us give thanks that those who came before us have modeled this public theology that drew us into this tradition and who handed it to us to faithfully carry forward. Blessed be, and amen.